Chapter 15. Exclusives come up to the polls and vote themselves to be ladies and gentlemen. But the thing doesn't stop there. The 980,000 come and vote themselves to be ladies and gentlemen too, and that elects the whole nation. Since the whole million vote themselves ladies and gentlemen, there is no question about that election. It does make absolute equality, and there is no fiction about it. While over yonder the inequality, by decree of the infinitely feeble, and consent of the infinitely strong, is also absolute as real, and absolute as our equality. Tracy had shrunk promptly into his English shell when this speech began, notwithstanding he had now been in severe training several weeks for contact and intercourse with the common herd on the common herd's terms. But he lost no time in pulling himself out again, and so by the time the speech was finished his valves were open once more, and he was forcing himself to accept without resentment the common herd's frank fashion of dropping sociably into other people's conversations unembarrassed and uninvited. The process was not very difficult this time, for the man's smile and voice and manner were persuasive and winning. Tracy would even have liked him on the spot, but for the fact which he was not really aware of, that the equality of men was not yet a reality to him. It was only a theory, the mind perceived, but the man failed to feel it. It was Hattie's ghost over again, merely turned around. Theoretically Barrow was his equal, but it was distinctly distasteful to see him exhibit it. He presently said, "I hope in all sincerity that what you have said is true as regards the Americans, for doubts have crept into my mind several times. It seems that the equality must be ungenuine where the sign names of castes were still in vogue, but those sign names have certainly lost their offense and are wholly neutralized, nullified and harmless if they are the undisputed property of every individual in the nation. I think I realize that caste does not exist, and cannot exist except by common consent of the masses outside of its limits. I thought caste created itself and perpetuated itself, but it seems quite true that it only creates itself, and is perpetuated by the people whom it despises, and who can dissolve it at any time by assuming its mere sign names themselves. It's what I think. There isn't any power on earth that can prevent England's 30 millions from electing themselves dukes and duchesses tomorrow and calling themselves so. And within 6 months all the former dukes and duchesses would have retired from the business. I wish they'd try that. Royalty itself couldn't survive such a process. A handful of frowners against 30 million laughers, in a state of eruption. Why, it's Herculaneum against Vesuvius. It would take another 18 centuries to find that Herculaneum after the cataclysm. What's a colonel in our South? He's a nobody, because they're all colonels down there. No, Tracy, shudder from Tracy, nobody in England would call you a gentleman and you wouldn't call yourself one. And I tell you it's a state of things that makes a man put himself into most unbecoming attitudes sometimes. The broad and general recognition and acceptance of caste as caste does, I mean, makes him do it unconsciously, being bred in him, you see, and never thought over and reasoned out. You couldn't conceive of the Matterhorn being flattered by the notice of one of your comely little English hills, could you? Why, no. Well, then, let a man in his right mind try to conceive of Darwin feeling flattered by the notice of a princess. It's so grotesque that it paralyzes the imagination. Yet that Memnon was flattered by the notice of that statuette. He says so himself. The system that can make a god disown his godship and profane it, it's all wrong, and ought to be abolished, I should say. The mention of Darwin brought on a literary discussion, and this topic roused such enthusiasm in Barrow that he took off his coat and made himself the more free and comfortable for it, and detained him so long that he was still at it when the noisy proprietors of the room came shouting and skylarking in, and began to romp, scuffle, wash, and otherwise entertain themselves. He lingered yet a little longer to offer the hospitalities of his room and his bookshelf to Tracy and ask him a personal question or two. What is your trade?
They call me a cowboy, but that is a fancy. I'm not that. I haven't any trade.
What do you work at for your living?
Oh, anything I mean I would work at, anything I could get to do, but thus far I haven't been able to find an occupation.
Maybe I can help you. I'd like to try.
I shall be very glad.
I've tried, myself, to weariness.
Well, of course where a man hasn't a regular trade he's pretty bad off in this world.
What you needed, I reckon, was less book learning and more bread and butter learning.
I don't know what your father could have been thinking of.
You ought to have had a trade. You ought to have had a trade, by all means.
But never mind about that. We'll stir up something to do, I guess.
And don't you get homesick. That's a bad business.
We'll talk the thing over and look around a little.
You'll come out all right.
Wait for me, I'll go down to supper with you.
By this time Tracy had achieved a very friendly feeling for Barrow, and would have called him a friend, maybe, if not taken too suddenly on a straight-out requirement, to realize on his theories. He was glad of his society, anyway, and was feeling lighter-hearted than before. Also he was pretty curious to know what vocation it might be which had furnished Barrow such a large acquaintanceship with books, and allowed him so much time to read. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.